SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at the website, stevebick.com. Coming out of a Monday, and hope you enjoyed day one of the recapping. And as always, when you get a Triple Crown Saturday, in the rearview mirror, you've got more recapping to do, and that includes a little recapping of what went on at Longchamp on Sunday. And Nick Luck is going to join us in about 10 minutes. We'll talk to Nick about Tsatsis's victory, Peter Brandt as resurgent as an owner can be after leaving the sport for a period, and an ARC win that obviously, with the variety of issues that the ARC dealt with, and I'm not even limiting it to, you know, to COVID related restrictions, about everything that could have gotten in the way of that ARC got in the way. I mean, it's kind of crazy. The weather, obviously, and the crazy rain, heavy going. And then there was the matter of this feed contamination that took out the O'Brien horses. So I'm gonna put that ball squarely in Nick Luck's court. Let Nick sort out everything that that went on. And there is, of course, a big wait and watch going on regarding Enable and the possibility that she could come to Keeneland and maybe go out with a Breeders' Cup turf reprise. So we'll see. We'll see what Nick knows and hears, has heard in the aftermath. It's still early. And as so many have noted immediately after the ARC, that, you know, the question started to bubble to the surface. What's happening? Oh, is she retiring? I saw any number of observers say it is Judmont's, you know, typical response to wait about a week before any decisions are made. But the good news was that she came out of it in good order. It's one of those odd scenarios where everybody was more concerned after the race with a horse that didn't win, which it can be, you know, a little, and again, we get it. She's a huge, you know, she's a huge deal, and she's wonderful and blah, blah. But, you know, the conditions and so forth, celebrate the horse that won. So Nick Luck, and looking forward to catching up with Nick, and we'll also, get a peek at where things stand. I haven't heard an update. When I talked to Nick, what was he with us about a month ago, and haven't heard an update about his coming and as part of the coverage. And he was hopeful when we talked to him last about coming to the Cup. So we'll find out as we get much closer. And still plenty of decision making that's going to be forthcoming, and not just decisions, but also performances that earned their way in, including tomorrow in the Jessamine at Keeneland, the grade two. It looks great, actually. And we'll glance at that at some point, I'm sure. Also have to look at Indiana tomorrow. Has got, as part of the pick five, they've got four stakes. A really nice sequence. So maybe we'll get Bill Downs in today. I'll see if Bill wants to do it today. You got the Florence Henderson. Everybody loves the Florence Henderson. The Brickyard, the A.J. Foyt, the Merrillville, and a second-level allowance makes up the pick five tomorrow. And it's good. 10 by 7 by 12 by 11 by 12. How about that? So maybe we'll do that. We'll either do it today or tomorrow, depending on Bill Downs' availability. Speaking of available, Mike Trombetta is available. And we'll talk to Mike at the bottom of the hour after Nick. And Trombetta was on the list, and I mentioned yesterday as part of the recapping that Trombetta had won three of the weekend stakes. He won the Ski Pat and the very one, and then turns around and wins the Belmont Turf Sprint with Wet Your Whistle. And then he turned around and won another stake yesterday. I said to Mike, are you done? You done winning stakes for this week? Last night at Presque Isle, a win for Mrs. Weber, too. And we'll talk to Trombetta. Sweet, super sweet, wins the Presque Isle Deb last night with Scott Spieth. And won well, 3-2 favorite. And clearly a filly that likes the synthetic. She's a First Samurai that Mrs. Weber fashioned and had tried the turf after breaking the maiden. She was in that Bolton Landing. And by the way, that Bolton Landing with Toby's Heart and Joy's Rocket and that Amanzi Yimplio, there's like four horses that have won out of that race. I got to pull up that chart, the Bolton Landing. The whole field, it seems. It was an eight-horse field. I think at least four horses have won out of that Bolton Landing August 19th at Saratoga. So, Trombetta. And he'll be live at Timonium, and we'll get a little Timonium from Mike and see what he thinks. Today is the wider selection of hips. Yesterday, the New York Breds and a Cupid, and not a gray Cupid, was the session topper. And it's interesting that the McGowans, Mike and Vicky McGowan, Extreme Racing, that you see mostly out in the Midwest. Mac Robertson trains for them and buys with them. And they did have some horses at Delaware this summer, and still do. But Mac has most of them out in the Midwest. But they bought this Cupid. And you're looking at what, 155? Was that the number? 160? 160. And it was in that range. And see, the numbers were okay. It's tough. I think everybody, I saw some quotes, and everybody just seemingly happy to clear inventory. And, you know, live to go another, you know, another round. The Pinhookers are competing with end users, and you know, on the top end, it's just the same story over and over again, it seems, at the sale. Did notice that some quotes from Dave Scanlon, and we've got a horse, you know, we bought a couple horses through Dave, and Dave and his partner Marty Shapiro, they were active yesterday. They bought three, and you know, Dave will take them down to Ocala and get them ready We've got Scherzando getting ready for his debut in McLean's Music Hall. And he's, I would think, you know, two, three works away. And Marty and Dave partnered in with us and a handful of DT owners. It was a good weekend for McLean's Music, Complexity, with that performance. So we can, Case, we could reach for, might as well reach for Nick. Let's get him now because he's got exactly this 20-minute window. And Nabel might not be retired, but She's a Julie is. And She's a Julie, the multiple grade one winner and a Asmussen Barn favorite named for Julie Asmussen. And just hasn't been, you know, just with the, came back for another year here, but really never really got traction. And she ends up almost $1.2 million in earnings. The La Troyenne and the Phipps, she really was terrific. And she's gonna be offered. She's going to go right into the sale in November at Phasing. Night of Stars. And certainly she was a star. And this will be a tough one. When she leaves. In fact, here's a quote. This was in, where was this, Blood Horse? There's a nice quote from Steve Asmussen. Her talent was obvious with two grade one wins on top of her other graded stake wins and placings. I would be remiss not to thank Carol and Stacy Castile, the original owners who were responsible for naming her, for Steve's wife, Julie. That comes from Peter Bradley. So, And here's an interesting note that Bradley also talked about. Scott Blasey, Darren Fleming, Ron Werner, Toby Sheets, almost every, virtually every assistant and string manager in the Asmussen galaxy had her at one time or another, and she was good, really good. She's a Julie. She's one of those horses. I don't know about you. I should pull up her record. She was one of those horses I just never bet right. Whenever I went in the other direction, she'd jump up and win. If I bet her, she didn't run well. Everybody's got them, right? Everybody's got those kinds of horses. So, all right. Case is efforting, as we say, is efforting Nick Luck. So we'll wait to catch Nick. You know, yesterday you may have heard me reference a couple of passings, and the hearts go out to Nick Gonzalez, who lost wife Martha. And the Gonzalez's are, you know, the stalwarts on the Ontario racing scene, and you know, long time at Fort Erie and Woodbine, and really a, you know, a racetrack couple in the purest sense. So sympathies and thoughts with Nick Gonzalez and the barn. And also I saw where Marty McGee let it be known that Rick Lee had passed, and Lee at from Turfway and other all kinds of roles around the game, and as a official, and there's been just way too many of late, way too many passings. So thoughts are with families and friends. We'll turn to Nick Luck, who joins us now in wake of the ARC and in wake of a bunch of stories that emanated from ARC week. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yes, you're right. It wasn't quite the the triumph we expected, was it?
No. And, you know, I guess we're always used to weather affecting the going. When it has a horse like Enable that has got such a spotlight on her, it's even more pronounced. And then you fold in what transpired with this contaminated feed story and losing the Ballydoyle runners, and it really, the whole thing kind of went sideways.
It did go sideways, and one may be contingent upon the other to a greater or lesser extent. I mean, first of all, the weather. It really was torrential, the rain in Paris, for several days, and I think there'd be plenty of race courses around the world which wouldn't have been able to race, but seemingly the turf on the Bois de Boulogne can take as much rain as you want to chuck on it, and it just gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and then possibly the worst thing that happened was you had 24 hours of drying, which meant that it was incredibly holding, and that really wasn't suitable for any horse. In point of fact, Enable's odds shortened because the received wisdom based on her career profile as a whole was that soft, very soft ground would inconvenience her less than it would convenience other horses in the race. And I think that was a reasonable contention to make, given the fact that when she won her first arc, when she was a brilliant three-year-old, the ground was soft as Chantilly that year, because Blanchetant was under reconstruction. And then last year, yeah, it was similarly revolting ground, but she still finished second, and quite a good second at that, and might have won had she been held on for longer. So I think it was a reasonable contention to expect her still to have the best chance in the race, even though the ground was borderline unraceable. So I'm not necessarily ascribing her defeat solely to the surface. There's no doubt that as my colleague Lydia Hislop said on my podcast yesterday, that she was ridden quite uncharacteristically defensively by Frankie this time. I think possibly mindful of the fact that it might be her last race, and also mindful of the fact that she's getting a little older. He's very fond of her. If he felt things weren't going absolutely right, then he wasn't going to pressurize her unduly. I think if this race had been 2 years ago, he might not have allowed Pierre Chalboudo on the longtime leader Persian King to set extremely pedestrian fractions up front, which wasn't going to suit any horse in the race, least of all her. So she found herself badly positioned in a steadily run race on ground that wasn't really suitable for any of them, let alone her. And for the first time in her life, she offered very little in the way of resistance. And having offered very little in the way of resistance, she was not really asked to offer any more. So with that in mind, is it possible that she might go round one more time? Not for another whole season, but could she have another race? We'll come to that in a moment. As regards the Ballydoyle horses that didn't run, well, of course, a function of the fact that you had four horses, all of whom were stout stayers at the distance who didn't take part, meant that, you know, horses who did want an honest test at the mile and a half were ill-afforded that. So no Sovereign, no Serpentine in the race. The obvious pace came out, and the pace is set by a horse who had no business getting 12 furlongs in Persian King. So that tells you what kind of a race it was. It wasn't a satisfactory race. But having said all of that, to call the winner just a worthy horse would be to damn him with faint praise, really, because Sontas was a very good horse last season. He looked like a fast 10-furlong horse who wanted a sound surface, and he's added more game this time by showing that he's courageous as well as classy. And it was an old-fashioned piece of French training, straight out of the 1970s, 1980s playbook of freshening a horse up, giving them the preparatory run, and getting them ready to peak on the right day. And that's exactly what Jean-Claude Rouget did. And it was a smart ride from Christian De Muro, never let the leader get too far away from him. And the horse still has a turn of foot, and was able to deploy that turn of foot in the conditions. And, you know, he's going to make a valuable stallion prospect for, guess who? Coolmore, who, although they didn't have any runners in the race, still managed to win it.
talk a little bit, Nick, because I always find it frustrating when the first topic about a big race result focuses on those that didn't win. Let's talk about Roger and what this means to him, as well as Christian DeMauro. And particularly for Roger, it's a breakthrough. I mean, this is a race that obviously not just French horsemen want on their resume. I mean, from an international perspective, it's as big as there is really anywhere. And for Roger, it really has to be very impactful and meaningful.
I think on a human level, the impact of the three stories of owner, trainer, rider are very interesting. You know, in reverse order, Christian DeMauro comes from a fabulous Italian riding family. He's arguably the most talented yet of that gilded dynasty. He's just very, very good. And he had the choice between, and it was a difficult choice as well, between Sotas and, you know, the rational part of your brain thought, well, can Sotas really run any better than he did last year when he was in really good form and he was third? And now he's coming wheeling round again and he's not in such good form. And then he had the choice between him and the filly Rabia, who, although she had been beaten in her trial, still shaped with loads of promise, and was a three-year-old filly, you know, classic arc, getting all the weight, the gender allowance and the age allowance. So it was not an easy decision. So not only did he give the horse a great ride, but he also first and foremost made the right choice. The trainer guided him that way. The trainer's trained more winners than any other racehorse trainer in European history. He is probably the least fated, F-E-T-E-D, the least fated trainer, at least decorated trainer of all who've achieved great things, and I hopefully now he'll get the recognition, the global recognition that he deserves. He's won just about everything there is to win, and he's been around forever. So this was the gaping hole for a French trainer in his CV. Okay, many of his 6,000 plus winners have come in the provinces, but he's trained enough Group 1 winners, enough Classic winners, that he was overdue an arc, and he's got one now. And as for the owner, well, you know all about Peter Brandt, but he'll tell you himself, and he said everywhere in the last few days, that this was the race he wanted to win the most, because he can remember going when he was in his 20s in 1971, seeing Mill Reef win the arc. He lived through it all with his brilliant mare, Triptych, who ran 42 times and was placed twice in the race. 42 times she ran in her career. What an amazing mare she was. And, you know, then he took a break out of the game and he came back, and this was the race he wanted to win. And, yeah, he's a lover of North American and European horse racing and breeding, and a particular lover of this race. And just a great shame that he wasn't able to be there. But I think for all those reasons, the arc still had a special significance.
Well, the result... And of course, the Ark and Breeders' Cup storylines have intersected for years.
Yep.
In this particular case, Sotas goes straight to stud, and the question in wake of the Ark, watching and seeing what Prince Khalid is going to say, and I suppose we'll hear from Teddy Grimthorpe early next week about Enable's future. Do you want to speculate, Nick, and reading the tea leaves?
I'll speculate. I don't think it's impossible. In all honesty, if you'd asked me a week ago, I'd have said, oh, not again. You know, we squeezed this lemon the last 3 years. Will she, won't she? Surely not this time. Surely that'll be it. But they've confounded us before. Who's to say they won't confound us again? And if they feel it's an unsatisfactory note on which to end, if they feel she's capable of running a career best, which she's going to have to do if she's going to win the Breeders' Cup there, then they might just give it a roll. They might just give it a roll. They might think, you know, they look at the contenders. If this was an ordinary-ish Breeders' Cup turf, if it was last year's race, no disrespect, we had a super winner last year, but there wasn't much depth in the race, then I think they might have given it a go. The problem is this time, you're running into the jaws of the best European horses as well. You're running into the jaws of Gay App, and you're giving weight to Love, and possibly a few other aidens. because he couldn't run them. He couldn't run them at the weekend, so he's got to run them somewhere. And we know he's going to stick anything on the plane that's viable. The money for the Breeders' Cup this year, relative to what else is around in the rest of the world, is fantastic. So I don't think it's impossible, Steve. But the ball facts are that if she does come, she's going to have to run right up to her very best. She's probably going to have to produce a better performance than she did when she beat Magical in that famous race at Churchill Downs 2 years ago. So we're going to have a great race for the turf, no doubt.
Back to Ballydoyle and the horses that were unable to run, Japan and Sovereign and Mogul and Serpentine, and some thoughts about, you know, what it means coming out of that camp. And, you know, as recently as, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, I thought things were kind of up in the air about, you know, how much European and international participation there was going to be at Keeneland. And I think with each passing day, it becomes more and more likely that there's going to be not just active participation, but perhaps, you know, very active. Some thoughts about, you know, who we think we can expect.
Well, I think there's going to be some depth in the senior races, which is what I like to see. I mean, I think the last 2 or 3 years, we've had one or two nice horses in what you would call the senior grass races, but not the strength in depth that I would expect. But the overall numbers have been bolstered by lots of people eager to pack up the juvenile turf races, which are great, don't get me wrong, and we enjoy them. But what we really want is a big clash between the best American turf horses and the best European turf horses in those senior turf races. And, you know, for good measure, I always like a few Europeans in the dirt races as well, but I've come to realise that that's probably expecting quite a lot these days. As far as the actual mile and a half turf is concerned, well, we know Love is going to run in that race. That's the plan for her. She's the best three-year-old filly in Europe by a long way. She's won all her Group 1s by at least 5 lengths and sometimes by double digits. And she'll be pretty fresh as well. She hasn't run since York. Then we've got Gayath, who is the highest rated horse in the world at the moment, off the back of his win in the Juddmonts International. I don't think he lost a whole load in defeat in the Irish Champion Stakes, but what Ballydoyle did prove is that if you want to try and expose a flaw in Gayath, you've got to serve it up to him from the outset, and you've got to push him right out of his comfort zone right from the word go. So if they run more than one horse in the Breeders' Cup turf, you can guarantee they're not going to give Godolphin Gayath an easy time of things, even if he is the most talented and even if he has achieved the most at a mile and a half. Then you can bet that Aiden will run at least one other, maybe Mogul, maybe Serpentine. You'd imagine if Magical goes to the Breeders' Cup, she'll run in the fillies race. Dermot Weld has got Tanawa, who was very impressive in the Breed Opera to add to her victory the time before. And I would guess she'll go to the filly and mare turf, but she might have other options as well. One Master will run in the mile by the looks of things. That's 3 times she's run in the Prix La Forêt. She's an extended 7 furlong horse with a turn of speed, so I can see why she's running that. It looks as though Safe Voyage, who's been a really hardy older horse this season, is set for the Breeders' Cup mile. And if you look at his record left-handed round a bend, it's almost unimpeachable. He's a 7-year-old now, but he's not getting any worse. So there's a handful. I think the intention is still for the 3-year-old Siskin to come for the Breeders' Cup mile. And then you can chuck in a few Aidens in there as well. I would imagine Circus Maximus will be going back. And I'm probably leaving out a whole stack of horses that you can shout at them. People will be shouting at the radio now. But, you know, this is going to be, as things stand at the moment, this is going to be a strong group of horses. But if you did have the wild card of Enable going there, then we'll start being excited.
There's also just the notes that I made up yesterday, the Lagardère winner, that Seal Away.
Yeah, and why wouldn't you? I mean, you do have to take some of those results at the weekend with a little skepticism, particularly the 2-year-old races. The Jean-Louis Lagardère came up a bit thin. I think the runner-up Nando Barrano is a nice horse, but I don't think he really showed his form. And I think the winner was really the only one that handled the ground. But the race was a Breeders' Cup Challenge Series race. It was a winning year in. Why wouldn't you, frankly?
Yeah, I think we're also... Yeah, you mentioned Tarnawa, right?
Yeah, I'm sure Tanawa will come. I'm sure that the Arcos family will fancy another crack at a Breeders' Cup race with Alpine Star. You know, she's a very tough, quite small, but quite tough filly, she could arguably run in either race. She could run in the mile or the filly in mare turf, I think. Though, you know, if they've got Circus Maximus for the mile, he ran a fine race there last year. Maybe they'll run Alpine Star in the filly's race.
Well, enough about what horses are coming. Whoever comes. What about the most important shipper, Nick Luck?
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, like most people, I haven't been on an airplane since March, or most people in this country anyway. And that could likely be my first opportunity. I mean, at this stage, my bosses and I think that I'm coming. I think the issue is more likely to be if there's any kind of increase in the lockdown status in the UK than what's happening in the US. But as things stand, my plan is to be at Keeneland for the Breeders' Cup.
Outstanding.
But Steve, in these times, until my feet touch the ground in Kentucky, I'm not quite going to believe it.
Well, exactly. But I had to ask. And before I let you go, impressions of what we saw in the Preakness on Saturday.
Oh, it was the race of the weekend, wasn't it? No doubt about that. Yeah, had everything. The filly against the colt. Hard filly as well against the Kentucky Derby winner. It had the lot. I thought it was a terrific race. Wonderful story as well. Robbie Alvarado back in the big time in unlikely circumstances. And as Kenny McPeak told us earlier in the week, he won't get him off the horse now. And yeah, he was very open about the fact that he felt very badly let down by Tyler Gaffleone and his agent, leaving him without a jockey 6 days for the race and scratching around and coming up with Robbie. And I thought it was a wonderful ride. I thought he got her running hard and aggressively, but just kind enough to leave a bit up his sleeve. And I thought it was a ride of wonderful guile, had the benefit of the rail, and just it was a terrific horse race. And from the way that the trainer's talking, it looks as though take on the older males over a mile and a quarter, because that's the race better suited to her than the race over a mile and an eighth. So I'd love to see her in the Classic. I think she just, you know, adds such richness to that storyline. It was a wonderful race. One of the races of the year so far, for sure. I mean, anywhere in the world.
We lost you there for a minute, but I got the theme, which is we brought this up yesterday with McPeak and with Andy Beyer, based on with Andy on the figs and with Kenny on his evaluation. It really seems like the 10 furlongs, you know, we talk about this much more often, Nick, when it comes to turf horses, but she really feels like an authentic 10 furlong horse.
Yeah, no pun intended. I think she is, and that there aren't that many of them. That's the point. Yeah, you run a strongly run race at a mile and a quarter, and there aren't that many horses who are going to be, you know, wanting to run and keep running at that distance. So I think she's definitely one of them. And in receipt of the gender allowance, you know, if you factor that in and take into account what Andy was saying on your show, I'd have absolutely no doubt that would be the way that I would point with Swiss Guide. They've been brave thus far. Why not carry on in that same courageous vein? What have they got to lose, frankly? She's already a Classic winner.
Exactly. Nick, I appreciate it. For those that haven't yet caught on to Nick's Daily Podcast, visit Nick Luck on Twitter and sign up. And particularly, you know, if you've got a feel and or want to improve your feel and understanding of the international race scape, let Nick Luck be your guide. And Nick, I'm sure we'll talk at least once more before Keeneland, but otherwise we'll see you at Keeneland, fingers crossed.
I hope so, Stephen. Just thank you very much for the plug. But you are a very generous man. I've always known this. What I would say is I'm incredibly indebted to everybody I've been able to reach out to in the United States as well for contributions to the podcast. And today, if you want to, there's no point me speculating about how some trace substance got into Gaines' feed, which ended up with all these trainers having to withdraw horses all over the weekend. And by the way, it wasn't just Aidan O'Brien; it was five, right, six trainers in the UK as well. The first person I ever worked for in horse racing or anything to do with the horse business was somebody many of your listeners will know, Dr. Joe Pagan, the president of Kentucky Equine Research. He is probably the most respected voice internationally in this field, in the field of equine nutrition and science. And I was able to call on his expertise today to give us some context on this. You won't find a more authoritative voice on matters pertaining to this. And I was really, it gave me a big kick to be able to call him up 20, however many years after I was a 18-year-old who walked into his office and was told to go and assemble my own desk. It gave me a great kick to be able to interview him as an expert on the show this morning. So if you go to the podcast, you'll hear him talking all about that.
Outstanding. I appreciate that. And we know of Dr. Pagan through Carol. I think Carolyn Connolly is working for Kentucky Equine. And
he's a wonderful guy, seriously clever man, and has done great things for equine nutrition around the world.
Yeah, we had him on. I guess, gosh, it must have been late. It must have been late last year, as well. And I didn't know that was you had a connection in that direction.
I think I was his first international intern back in 1996/7.
How about that? Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now, Nick, you surprise us at every turn. Nick Luck, everybody, as good as there is anywhere. Nick, I hope we are going to see you, but we'll certainly talk either way.
Thanks a lot, Steve. Take care.
Nick Luck, everybody, always spectacular. And waiting in the wings, Mike Trombetta, who comes to us from the sales grounds at Timonium. It's a long day today at Timonium because they've got to sell about twice as many hips as they did yesterday. In the meantime, Mike is probably buying everybody lunch at Michael's, though, because he only won four stakes since Saturday. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. I guess I don't know if we should work backwards or it's so tough to keep track. But every time I looked up, you were winning another stake.
Yeah, it was a crazy good week.
Let's start with the week at Pimlico, actually, and talk about the circumstances surrounding particularly Saturday. I mean, it not unusual to have it be a little quiet leading up to Preakness under normal conditions, Mike, but talk about the atmosphere, particularly on Saturday.
You know, obviously it was way different than it normally is, but they did a nice job with it. I was there for a few hours, and they seem to have it under control and get everybody in and out properly and, you know, meet all the protocols that they were trying to keep in place. So, you know, just grateful we were able to have it.
Let's dive into the results. And when it came to the Ski Pat, it was interesting when I saw that Shalon had scratched, I realized right away, well, Never Enough Time is going to have a real opportunity to wire this field, and that's exactly how it turned out. This is a nice win for Larry Johnson and you.
Yeah, she's a nice filly. You know, we really liked her from the get-go. She got sidetracked a little bit late last year. She got really sick. She just had a really bad respiratory infection that just basically knocked her out for a couple of months. So, fortunately, she got through it well and came back this year. And we took the opportunity for a comeback race, being it was one of the things she would probably need one anyway. We ran her on the turf as an experiment to see if she had any affinity for it at all, and she didn't. So it was no real harm done other than we found out what she was all about. And then she came back and, you know, she had a couple wins in a second. So she's off to a very good run for this part of her season.
She's a Munnings filly, and she's a homebred for Larry.
Yeah, yeah. I trained her mother, and you know, Larry's mares and all go back quite a few years. So over the years, we've had quite a few of them. So she continues the tradition.
Julian Pimentel aboard, and she, you know, grabbed control early and turned back Liza Star first, and then later here came Bronx Beauty as well as Bye Bye Jay, but they weren't going to get to her, and kind of similar actually to Lackey's, you know, the way Lackey had a host of challengers around at the wire, but the win goes your way. And by the way, we had Damon on yesterday. I was looking forward to that call, Mike, as much as any in recent memory for him to get his first graded stake win.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, but Damon's a great guy. He's been at it a long time.
Exactly. Let's talk about the very one and the win in here. And as I dig through the stack of PPs from the weekend, where is it? You know what? Before we, while I find it, meanwhile, you could talk about getting the nice third place finish from No Mo Lady as well in the Gallarette.
Yeah, that helped. That filly's been very genuine. You know, she's had a few stakes placings, and this was her first graded stakes placing. So, you know, that was a step in the right direction. And, you know, she always ran okay on the dirt, but I always felt there was more to be had there. And when we put her on the turf for her first, you know, start going two turns on the grass, it became pretty evident that she wouldn't be running on the dirt anymore.
Well, and this is obviously a quality field. She got beat three and change for everything, and Julian really was finishing with her, and it was important because she gets the head nod over She's on the Warpath to get that graded black type onto her resume, and that's important. Let's round out the mare conversation, and here's another Larry Johnson homebred, and this is really a Johnson product, the Street Magician, six-year-old mare, a great time, and what a nice rally she turned in the very one.
That was one of the more remarkable races that we've had all season. You know, it looked hopeless. I think she was as far as 14 or 15 lengths out of it early. The turf was soft. The horses on the outside went blazing, you know, to try to get position, and I think they went the first quarter in 22, and which was just too much for that course, and she just kind of waited her time down inside, and honestly, you know, yet again, I mean, it seems to be the theme for me this year. It seemed like she had no chance in hell of getting up, and sure enough, you know, they softened up through the stretch, and she had horse, and she was able to get outside and get on by.
Well, and I suppose that win it, you know, shows his videotape to, you know, to the rest of the barn to inspire them.
Well, I tell you what, I still haven't gotten over that. That was just beyond anything I've ever been associated with. I mean, it's still indescribable to me.
We'll talk about win and the unfortunate circumstances that are gonna, you know, that ended his career last week, but a great time, and you know, a 6-year-old mare, Mike, that is really, she doesn't have a lot of mileage on the tires.
Yeah, well, every time I enter, it rains, so you know, she's one of those kind of horses, and it's a luxury for her to be in the entries, and we stay on the turf.
Well, this was very much like the theme we've been hitting on with the other two runners that we've talked about already. This is an important performance for her because she had been stakes placed in the license fee at Belmont going back to the summer, and before that, last summer in the Jamila, which you know, the restricted stakes. So now she's got straightforward black type winning the very one, and is that going to be enough at the end of the year for Larry to put her in the broodmare band?
Yeah, I think so. That's always been the plan with her anyway. He wanted her to, that was definitely
great.
One he was going to keep. So to round out the season with a stakes win, I think she's probably accomplished enough. I think she's six heading to seven. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's not looking pretty hard and heavy right now as far as who he would want to mate her with.
Excellent. Well, Larry Johnson, really a fixture on the, you know, on the scene. And of course, you know, as long as I know you, I mean, Larry's been with you, I suppose, from the time you started training.
Well, we hooked up, I can't remember how many years ago it's been, but I'm sure it's been 20 years ago or better. So, you know, we go back quite a ways, and he's been a fantastic supporter of us. And we actually partner up, and we own a bunch of horses together and brood mares and babies and everything alike. So, he understands the business inside and out, and he's very good to work with.
Before we talk about the Belmont Turf Sprint and then yesterday at Presque Isle, let me just ask you about American Giants Try in the Hilltop. I mean, that was a crazy deep race, and he finished kind of mid-pack and didn't run badly.
No, American Giants, she's a solid enough filly. I'm not sure whether she was excited about the turf being a little soft. I mean, I think some of our runners really enjoyed it, and I think she was one that I'm on the fence with. I'm not sure it was for her, but, that was a deep field, a tough competitive field. Her last two races that she's had to run in were just, very deep. And, if she stays in good form, I think when we get down to South Florida, and maybe we can exploit her a little bit in some of those Florida bred stakes, and, that might be helpful for her.
Well, that leads us to Sunday at Belmont, and I'd kind of forgotten about this race, and kind of got lost in the in the shuffle of the entire Giant weekend. But this ends up being a really important win, and Wet Your Whistle, who we've talked about any number of times, particularly when it came to his trips up to Woodbine, and the Grade One up there, and for some reason, he took no money, Michael, and Jose Ortiz got him on the lead, and this one was never in doubt. I mean, he was a winner every step.
He's one of those kind of horses that just flies just below the radar, and really, honestly, for one reason or another, doesn't get the respect he deserves. He's a very good little horse, and, we ran him at Laurel, and he looked like he was in a great spot. The turf was very soft, and the feedback from the rider was he just didn't want to do this on the softer course. So it was very nice to see him, land on the Belmont course, which, although it wasn't as hard as it is during the summer, it was on its way to getting much faster than it had been in previous days. So I think he hit it, he enjoyed it, he broke sharp, and jumped right in the race. And, he gets clear space in front of him. He's pretty tough.
This win counts for a lot, and from a figure standpoint, he doesn't seem to threaten the triple digit fig mark, but he's what's nice about him is that he's versatile. He winning wire to wire. I mean, we haven't seen him on the pace really for how far back do you have to go to the last time he won a race like that?
Yeah, you got to go all the way back to Woodbine, and that was been quite some time ago. I mean, he's a versatile horse. If there's not much pace in there, he can be close, and if there's lots of pace, he can come from as far back as last. So he's very good in that respect. And if I'm not mistaken, I think they made it give him a 100 buyer number the other day. Might have earned his first triple digit buyer number.
Let me see. I usually been known to send those, and I to you. And let me see. I very well may be right. And if so, suddenly he's look at that, the career best for the 5-year old. I love it. He's a gelding, so it's not like he's going anywhere. But he's gonna keep running. But it's nice at the end of the 5-year old year to post a career best fig.
Yeah, no, it was very good, and it was we didn't get started till late in the year. This was only his third race, off of injury from last season. He was beat up a little bit there at Kentucky Downs. He had a real rough trip and had needed some extra time off for it. So, he's pretty fresh still, and actually the owner's contemplating the Breeders' Cup. He's not nominated, no. So he's got some hard decisions to make, but he's seriously considering doubling down and taking a shot.
Well, and in that regard, you got to figure he comes back. Once you pay the fee, he's eligible for the rest of his career. So, why not? And I do have to mention, because we talked to Bo during the Keeneland sale, this is a Bo Lane bred son of Stroll.
Yep.
And Bo's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't often you get a $17,000 yearling that wins a great one.
No, it just breeds a good horse and wet your whistle. And I'm just looking. Let's see. Is that the he bred that mare to Algorithms as an unraced 3-year-old kicking around. And there was that. Oh, that decent filly, Shacklette, is the sister of Wet Your Whistle. She's won a few races, but he talked to us about on the final day at Keeneland. He was selling an Algorithms that actually sold well in 30,000 plus. We were always tracking Bo's horses. You see his name on the breeding line of a lot of stake winners. Mike, let's turn our attention to last night and Mrs. Weber, and talk about the debutante win last night, the little filly at 3-2.
I've always been fond of that filly. The waters were a little deep for her when we ran her at Saratoga, 5.5. Might have been too short. And as it turns out, on Old Reliable Twitter today, I understand that with her win last night, that makes the first four finishers are all stakes winners to come out of the Bolton Landing. So that's how difficult that race was at Saratoga.
I brought up a similar note when I saw the names at the top of that chart, that it was obviously a serious group of horses. Pretty crazy. Sweet, super sweet. And Mrs. Weber fashioned this one out of the Candy Ride mare, Our Candy Striper. She's by First Samurai. And, is this a case of a horse that the synthetic is perfect for her?
She certainly enjoys the synthetic. I really don't know what she's going to be on the dirt yet. I'm going to probably have to examine that here soon. But, I think she'll do turf and further. I just think the 5.5 was just too rapid for her. She's a big filly. And, I think at the end of the day, she's going to go two turns. But it was nice to get a stakes win for Live Oak with another one of their fillies. That goes a long way with that farm, for sure.
No doubt. And how much more racing will she see between now and the end of the year? How many more opportunities are there?
Well, there are some, and I have to dive into that. But, being a Florida bred, there may be some other unique opportunities as well. So, we're running out of calendar up here in the Northeast, so we'll be migrating south before you know it.
Well, it just based on Fig scenario, kind of feels like maybe a Tampa type.
Yeah, Tampa, Gulfstream with the Florida bred races and stuff like that. So, and at some point over the winter, we'll give her, she's been at it for a while, so Mrs. Weber likes to give her horses a break when needed, and, she can always stop in for a month or two at the farm if need be.
Nice. Mike, before I wrap up and before I ask you about the sale, tomorrow at Delaware, a couple of maiden special opportunities. Guns Blazing goes in the fourth.
That filly's okay. She's solid. She didn't, she was a little green first time and just learning, and I'm sure she'll wake up from that. And ultimately, I think that filly wants to go further, but I expect her to run much better tomorrow.
Well, and from a pedigree standpoint, she's really notable. She's a firing line, but she's out of that nice House of Fortune. Arnold Zetcher, there we go. And 60,000 as a Keeneland yearling. Must have been about book four, give or take. And the owner, what's Jet Black?
It's a gentleman that has a small partnership that he put together, and he buys some nice quality horses each year, and this is our first go-round with him, so hopefully we can do some good together.
Nice. That's in the fourth race tomorrow at Delaware. And then a first time, not this time, colt that Sonata Stable sends. This is Arzak, and certainly not this time, Mike. How many of them do you have in the barn, out of curiosity?
He's it. I'm looking at some of them today at Timonium, so if we can't add.
Well, Jack Oxley bred this out of Delightful Melody, the Tappet mare. She was a 500. He was a $575,000 two-year-old at OBS in April, and so clearly, you know, he looked the part and must have breezed the part. What do we expect tomorrow?
Yeah, if I'm not mistaken, he worked 10 flat for the sale, and that sire everybody's very excited about, and as they should be, because he's the ones that have run really well. You know, I think he's ready to jump into the mix and get started, and I think he'll run well.
This Sonata Stable, that's the port, they run big in Puerto Rico.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, nice. How'd you hook up with them?
It's a small, crazy world that it is, but their stable manager 10, 12 years ago worked for me for a year or two, and just in the small world that it is, when we ran in the Tampa Bay race to Sam Davis this year, it's just, you can't even make this stuff up. The box they gave me to sit in that day was right next to their box. And then we got to chatting, and, they wound up sending us some horses.
Unbelievable. That's what this game is. It's a game of relationships, there's no doubt. Let me round things out. I referenced Win-Win-Win's retirement, some final thoughts about the thrills and obviously the grade one Forgo that's going to send him to stud somewhere. An incredible thrill, and you tried lots of interesting things with him. He proved out on the grass and then a grade one sprinter. He's by hat trick, he's deserving of a chance somewhere.
I agree 100%. He's a big, beautiful horse. He's everything about him, if you were to see him, you would like. And I'm sure they will get in place somewhere here in the near future. And hopefully his second career does him justice. But, he's given me a lot of good time and travel, and he couldn't have went out any better. And, he just has one of those minor things that's minor in the big scheme of things, but it's significant enough that he just can't compete at the highest level. So, he's going to have a great retirement, and hopefully he's got a great second career.
And for those that forget about how well-rounded his resume was, he was multiple graded stake placed, grade two, Tampa Bay Derby and Bluegrass as a three-year-old, and tried, obviously, Derby and Preakness, but then wins the Manila and wins on the grass, wins a stake on the grass, and comes back and wins the grade one Forgo going 7/8. I mean, he's got speed, he's got stamina that comes from Miss Smarty Pants, the dam, and lot to like about Win-Win-Win, and you can imagine what the names of the progeny are going to be. They're going to be win-oriented. Mike, speaking of winners, what are you seeing there at Timonium? It feels like it's a lot of competition for the top layer, but you've always loved Timonium, all the different Timonium sales, as a place to find a bargain or two.
You know what? It's close to home. It's where I started. Is my, I started coming on this backstretch when I was 13 years old, walking horses. So I can't even describe what it's like just walking around here for me. But there's always, it's been good. I mean, I've always bought horses here, and I've been very, very fortunate over the years.
Anything of note? Any of those first crop regional sires catching your eye?
And that's one of the things we come here for. We start to look at them, and we watch all these horses come up in the back. And, there's a bunch of Moslers in the sale, and I work for the Country Life people, and there's Divining Rod. So, it's very interesting to see all these new sires, yearlings all in the same place. So it gives us an idea of you know, what's coming.
Well, we know that there'll be a bunch of good babies in the Trombetta camp next year. There's other horses we could talk about. But, Mike, get out there, buy some nice yearlings for yourself and for the clients, and congratulations on a incredible few days.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Mike Trombetta, everybody. And, of course, you can follow Mike on Twitter, Trombetta underscore Mike. And you've been hearing him on the show for as long as I've been involved, essentially, 15 years. One of my favorite moments when I years ago called him up out of the blue and said, "Mike, you come on the show. I will talk about your Derby horse." He said, "Well, I don't know if I've got a Derby horse." And then, of course, Saint would end up going off as the favorite in that Derby. Let's take a break. Top of the hour here. Jay Privman is going to do our season-ending Triple Crown recapping. And we'll get Jay's thoughts about the filly beating the Derby winner and the prospects coming out of it. And plus, we'll get Jay's overall seasonal recap as well as we start to tie the bow on Triple Crown 2020. Odd as it was. Back after this, Jay Privman a little bit as well. We'll talk to Andy Serling, Todd Pletcher later this morning as well. Back after a break.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the Races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Sirius XM.